This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you, no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are indeed heroes around you. Now, you're not going to hear them call themselves that, but that humility is part of what makes them all the more admirable. I'm talking, of course, about the men and women who have put their lives on the line for our freedom. And each time on Hometown Heroes, we take a trip back in time and listen to stories from our greatest generation. The goal is to honor our veterans for their service and their sacrifice, to preserve their stories so the price that's been paid for our freedom is not something we forget. And of course, along the way, the hope is that we're educated, we're entertained, and perhaps even inspired by just how much these veterans love our country. It is, of course, Father's Day weekend, and in thinking a little bit about that, it hit me that in many ways, listening to this show can feel like Father's Day weekend every weekend. I know we've had our fair share of female veterans on the program over the years, but of course it's mostly men. That's the majority of the folks who have served our country. And I've learned over the years that most of the people listening to Hometown Heroes are in the same position that I'm in. So many of us would not be here. We would have never been born if our fathers or our grandfathers hadn't made it safely home from war. I've also learned through your feedback that a lot of our listeners had parents or grandparents who served in World War II, but never talked about those experiences. So in a way, hearing the veterans share their stories here helps you learn a little more about what your dad or uncle or grandpa might have gone through. If you're fortunate enough to still have your dad around, I know you're going to be taking care of him for Father's Day. And if he's a veteran, why not take a minute to not only thank him for his service and the way he risked his life for you, but find out if he has a story or two to share that maybe he hasn't opened up about before. The story we're going to hear today is one that could not be told for nearly a quarter century after World War II, simply because our government wasn't sure if the secret code we're going to be talking about might need to be employed again if we ended up in another large-scale conflict. It wasn't until 1968 that the Department of Defense declassified the unbroken code used by Marines of Navajo descent to fluster the Japanese in the Pacific. Not until December of 2000 did President George W. Bush honor the 29 original Navajo code talkers with the Congressional Gold Medal. The rest of the code talkers that followed beyond those original 29, they received the silver medal. And in the last 10 or 15 years, quite a bit of information has filtered out. One big attention getter was the major motion picture Wind Talkers in 2002. It didn't get all the best reviews, but Wind Talkers did expose a whole bunch of people to the heroic work of the Code Talkers. And I think a bit of that trailer from that film might give you a hint as to what we're going to be discussing with one of the few surviving Code Talkers today.
The Japanese have pretty much busted every code we've thrown at them. The Corps developed the new code based on the Navajo language. You're to pair with a code talker. Your job is to keep him alive so he can do his job.
I'm Ben Yazzie. It takes me 2.5 minutes to do what used to take an hour.
Orders finally came through. We ship out tomorrow morning.
You see any combat, Yazzie? Looking forward to getting into some.
Are you now?
Relay the coordinates!
Joke gang, come!
You done good today, Ben.
You never called me that before.
Your mission is to protect the code at all costs. You understand me?
Yes, sir.
Again, that's a dramatization in the trailer for the 2002 movie Wind Talkers, but a lot of the things you heard there are going to tie directly into what we will hear from one of the surviving Navajo Code Talkers, Bill Toledo of Laguna, New Mexico. If you're listening today on the Rock of Talk 95.9 and 1600 out in Albuquerque, or even if you've traveled through the Duke City like I did, maybe you've seen him in Old Town Albuquerque, just across the street from the historic San Felipe de Neri Church, at a card table with several relevant books laid out under a banner reading Navajo Code Talker. That is where I sat down with Bill Toledo. Every day there are all kinds of people from all over the country and all over the world that come to Old Town Albuquerque to get a taste of history. I don't know if they expect to get World War II history, but you're here to provide that. Why do you come out here and sit here with these books and tell your story? What do you get out of it? What's in it for you?
Well, I was told to tell the stories so people will know how we used our language in the World War II. And that's what they want to hear. And that's why, and then we also sell books so our kids can use the money to go to school, you know. That's why we raise money off of these books, and then we let the people know how the code was made and how it was used on the battlefield. That's why we come down here. Then we go to different towns here in New Mexico, and we do a lot of it in here in Albuquerque. And then we go out of states to different places. Like we go out of Colorado, we go down to Texas and sub books down there and do the same thing too.
And for a lot of years, you couldn't even talk about what you did, could you?
We never talk about it for a long time. We just came home quietly. When we got discharged, we were told to keep our mouth shut. Never talk about it, you know, to our family, friends and all that. So at that time, they told us it might be used again. So I think we were having a little problem with Russia at that time, and I thought that we might use that again. So that's why we kept our mouth shut for about 40 years. Nobody knew about how we did with our language, you know. And then when they declassified the code, and then they ran up all the code talkers, whatever they were, and we have a big reunion down in Phoenix. And then they put it in the paper, and that's how they found out people. The people found out how we use our language in the war, you know.
And now there's all these books about it. There have been movies about it. What's that been like for you? Something that you had to hold inside and keep a secret, and then all of a sudden it's made you a bit of a celebrity.
Yeah, that's what happened. And when we became known, then everybody wanted to talk to you, you know. We go to make presentations at school, all the way from elementary, high school, university. So we go to different states, you know, and different cities, you know, and make presentation. And then we go on the reservation, talk to these Navajo kids, you know, on the reservation, make presentation on the code, you know, how we use our language in the war, you know. So we became well-known, you know. That's why we get all this requests, you know. Every time they want to hear from the Navajo code talker, you know, they know where we're at.
Yeah, you're right out here in Plaza Don Luis here in Old Town Albuquerque, and I'm sure you've talked to a lot of interesting people today. But some of the questions I have for you, first of all, let's start early on. What was it like growing up in the Navajo Reservation in northern New Mexico?
At home, in those times before the war, we didn't have no automobile. I think there was only two people that had automobiles, and the rest of us, we just traveled a wagon, you know. We had some school nearby where I went to school, you know, kindergarten, elementary, and then about 60 miles west of Torreon, that's where I grew up, eastern end of the Navajo Reservation. I went to school, it's Crown Point, New Mexico, it's a government boarding school. That's where I went to school. And at home, we have a lot of sheep. So I was one of the take care of the sheep, you know, during that time. And all I see is when all that herding sheep, you know, I see airplane going by way up there, you know. I would see very, very few automobiles being driven around the area, you know. And now I travel by airplane, you know, and I go all over the city, all over the country.
Times have changed. You're talking about school. Now, in school, did you guys do anything in the Navajo language or all in English, or how did that work?
We used to get punished for...
You're talking about school. Now, in school, did you guys do anything in the Navajo language or all in English, or how did that work?
We used to get punished for talking our language in the government school, you know. And they don't want us to talk Navajo in school. So when they catch us talking Navajo, and then they wash our mouth with their laundry soap to keep us, to shut us up, you know. And then when the war broke out, and then they came to you and said, "We want to use your language." as a code, you know. Yeah. So that's what happened.
Well, speaking of the war breaking out, I like to ask every veteran about December 7th. Do you remember where you were and how you found out that Japan had bombed Pearl Harbor?
Yeah, I was at Crown Point boarding school when we heard. Well, it was on Sunday when we heard the message that the Japanese had bombed Pearl Harbor. And we didn't know where Pearl Harbor was at the time. But Monday morning, a teacher showed us on the map, you know, where Pearl Harbor was located, Hawaii was located. That's how we found out, you know. And then from then on, you know, we have our old radio at home. We listened to that, you know, how the war was progressing, you know. And then one day, I was in school when one Navajo, he was already in the Marine Corps. He came to our school. He was out recruiting. He came to our school and wanted to talk to all the 16 years old that are in good physical shape, you know, and speak English real fluently, talk real good in Navajo. And he wanted to talk to all these kids, you know, in good health. So he talked to us for about 45 minutes, talking about marine life, you know. Later on, we found out that he was one of the co-talker that was trained. This first group that was trained, that was recruited, they made the code already. And they were out recruiting, you know, some more Navajos to go into the Marine Corps. And that's why he came to our school. So three of us from home and two from around Crown Point area, we got together. We talked about joining the Marines. So after we decided to join, then we told this young Marine, his name was Johnny Manolito. He was wearing Marine blues, you know, everything was shining, it looked real sharp, you know, and we wanted to be like him. So that's why they had told us that boot camp was kind of tough, you know, but we all decided to see if we can make it through, you know. So we told him, Johnny, that we wanted to join the Marines.
So that was way back in 1942, and that's how Bill Toledo's World War II journey started. Went from tending sheep on the Navajo Reservation to risking his life and using his native language to save lives. We're going to explore more of Bill's story when we come back, from those moments he can laugh about now to the ones that left him suffering flashbacks for decades. If you'd like to learn more about the Navajo Code Talkers and their unique history, go to NavajoCodeTalkers.org. That's NavajoCodeTalkers.org. I also have quite a bit of information linked at HometownHeroesRadio.com and, of course, on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, where you can find some photos of our guest, Bill Toledo. Bill had a couple of relatives who joined the Marines with him in 1942, and one of them had a very clever way of meeting the minimum weight requirement. We'll catch that story as well when Hometown Heroes continues right after this. You know, one of the things I appreciate so much about the veterans we meet on Hometown Heroes is that they're real. A sincere and genuine spirit really makes an impression on me, and that's why I'm such a big fan of Educational Employees Credit Union. It was EECU that spearheaded the launch of Central Valley Honor Flight with an initial donation of close to $25,000, and the giving did not end there. More than 200,000 members know EECU represents smarter banking, but it's not just about being smart, it's about the heart. I've worked with the folks at EECU for years, and I've watched them put their money where their mouth is, supporting their credit union members right where they live in hometowns up and down Central California. From sponsoring first-class Educator of the Year ceremonies to taking the lead in sending World War II veterans on an unforgettable journey, my friends at EECU keep proving that you are at the heart of everything they do. Go to myeecu.org to see what EECU can do for you, or just walk into any branch. And while you're there, if you enjoy this show, tell them thanks for supporting Hometown Heroes.